Are there any updates or additions to the agenda before we get started? This is a super session, so we might as well dive right in. Greg, you had mentioned yesterday on IRC that you wanted to add something to the agenda, but I don't know if we had addressed it on IRC yesterday or if we should add it to the agenda.
I think it's not entirely clear which of the I'm getting another echo again. Bono, it might have been when you came on, so I'm wondering if you've got something going on. That's better. It went away.
Okay, well, I muted myself. I'm wondering if my headset's echoing with itself, which would kind of suck.
I think there's still a number of open issues, and it probably requires the group to go through them in order to determine what can be closed or what further action is necessary, since I think we've addressed a lot of the stuff that's on there. But I don't know. I don't think there'd be time to do it today. Perhaps the best thing is for next week, if everyone has a chance to go through the remaining open issues and decide if either they can be closed or what further action should be taken to close them, or if they are obsolete and just should be not considered any further.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Okay.
Another small thing regarding the test suite. We talked about that on the mailing list, and yeah, it kind of got forgotten. Should we do the split of the test suite to a separate repository, or should we keep it like in that full main repository?
I think I would much rather that we keep it with the main repository, mainly because we wanted to try and keep some semblance of sync between the specs and the test suite. I know that that's not the case right now, but it's easier, I guess, to manage all this stuff. If we want, I guess it depends on why we want there to be a separate test suite. Right? I mean, so we could create something that allows people to download the test suite as a tar.gz file, and just kind of have something auto-generate that.
We
can also create an online suite too.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
If we decide we want to do an online application off of RDFA info, or excuse me, jsonlt.org, then it would make sense for the tests to be included within there. My experience with submodules in Git has not been great. It seems like it freezes the version that you put in there, and it is difficult to get it to update. At least it has been for me.
Yeah. So for right now, I'd prefer that we just keep it there until there's a very compelling reason to break it out. I feel like we can do most of the functionality that we need, such as a downloadable test suite, things of that nature, by just writing some really simple PHP code. Any thoughts on that, Marcus? Is that fine with you, or...?
Yeah, it's fine. It's just my continuous integration stuff currently has to download the whole big repository all the time.
Wait, why big repository? It shouldn't be that big. How many megs is it right now?
I don't know. It just takes some time, and I think it would be much faster to just, you know, have the test suite separately.
So what if we created... what if we created a tar.gz file that you can get, and then PHP basically auto-generates the tar.gz file if it doesn't exist or if it's out of date? Would that?
Yeah, I mean, it's not that big issue right now. It would just, I think, make it easier, also for other people to contribute maybe, because it's also a bit tricky to find that stuff.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really not a big issue at the moment. I just wanted... Yeah, so that it doesn't get forgotten.
I agree with that too. I think I was initially in favor of a separate repo, but I have the same feeling as Greg that submodules won't really solve the problem. And in other cases where I've had to sync with an external test suite, either working with it online or as a local copy of the web app as in rdfa.info has been very beneficial in general. And in the case where I want my code to run tests locally with its own test runner, I think that I also want to check in the tests, copies of the test in my own repo. And in that case, some kind of easy downloading and updating of my local copies would be the best. So I agree with you on that.
Okay. All right, so no change for now, and we'll try and make it easier to download a package of test suite, or basically download the test suite in some way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. I have to remark that I think that I will have to leave in about an hour or so.
Okay.
So I will just say no.
Okay. We've front-loaded the things that could change the syntax, so we'll try and get to all those. Lane just said that GitHub does have a zip file that you can download of the site, I guess. Lane, do you have a link to that? I didn't know that you could do that.
Yeah, that's, again, the whole repository, I think.
Yeah, it's just on the main page. I don't have the link in front of me, but... It's just like right next to where the Git URL is. There's a zip link.
Okay. For the downloading option, it would be optimal if it was just a manifest and the test.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I can locally rsync them to my copy if I want it in my own repo.
All right, let's go ahead and jump into the issues then if there are no changes to the agenda. First up is issue 91. This deals with the redefinition of keywords and how we handle that. So basically, I think the proposal here, hold on. Issue 91. Sorry, this is Nicholas's issue. Basically, allowing term definitions for RDF type to have kind of other shapes. So it's the idea is, can we, in the context, redefine what the keywords do? So if you look at issue 91, Nicholas's example, he redefines at type to basically be a set, to always take a set. The question that raises is, should we be able to redefine or change the way that keywords work in JSON-LD? Marcus, I believe you said that you don't think that you should be able to change keywords or how keywords are used or interpreted.
Yeah.
I tend to agree with that. Nicholas, do you want to give a bit more background on how strongly you feel about this issue?
Sure. Yes. I mostly agree with you. If we can avoid it, I'd also prefer not to be able to redefine keywords at all. I think that would become problematic. But the general problem I have is with RDF type, as it is a regular relation from an RDF perspective. So not being able to redefine it and sort of force it to all be a set is fine with me, if it is true that, as Marcus suggests, you can create just a regular keyword and map it to the URI for RDF type. I also did that in the third example, where I have defined type and mapped it to the URI for RDF type, really. And I don't really know. I'm not that acquainted with the algorithm, so I'm not sure that example actually works. So I just want to make sure that if I need to control the way type is possible to use in a compact form, can I today?
Currently, in compaction and expansion, nothing would prevent you to do that, the thing that you did in example 3.
All right, but would it work, or would I end up with... I don't have any problems, but would my definition of type take precedence over the built-in at type in that case?
You don't use that type at all in that example, so there is no precedence.
I think what Nicholas is saying is when you go to compact, how does the algorithm pick between at type or the other one that he specified? And I don't think that we say that anywhere in the spec. So we would have to add language in that says the more specific thing. Well, we kind of say it, right? We say the more specific type gets selected in compaction.
Okay.
Because you don't expand to the full IRI, you keep at type in expansion.
Yes. So in the third example, it is actually less specific than the if we expect the first to be predefined. I'm not sure how magic at type is today. If we actually consider the first form to be an implicit part of a default context, or if we handle type magically.
If you have at type in your document and you expand it, it's still at type. It doesn't get expanded to the full RDF IRI. So in that case, that's type without the at would expand to a full IRI, but the other at type would still remain at type. So they don't collide.
Type without an at is just another property. So its rules are just like another property. The only time when it gets confused is when you go to RDF and back. So there's no way to know to use something else if you're coming back from RDF. Exactly. Otherwise, then defining your own type, now it's not going to be useful, it's not going to be used in framing, say, and there's a lot of stuff specific to at type in framing that would not apply here.
Yeah, but that I can live with that from a matching point of view, but my only problem really is when I compact. I want to be able to control the form of the result of compaction so that I can either force type to always be a set, and in that case I have no problem to define a non-keyword for it, just a term called type or a, but I want to be able to control that.
If you do that, then it'll work just like you can control any other property.
So I can expect the first example to be part of an implicit context.
Okay, well, the first example is using at type. The first two examples use at type.
The first two examples are part of a context.
But that wouldn't work, at least not currently, because you can't redefine at type.
No, but the first form is how at type works implicitly.
Except
the first
that it doesn't
form
get expanded to a full IRI.
It doesn't get expanded to an object with an ID that is the IRI. It just expanded to an IRI directly, the way that ID is. So it's either a string or it's an array of strings.
Yeah, I know.
It's not an array of objects.
No, the first form is, if we didn't have at type magic in the spec at all, and you were allowed to define terms for type, the first form would behave exactly as how type behaves right now.
Not for expansion, no. Because when you expand at type, you don't get an object with an ID. You just get the string.
Yeah, right. Type is preserved. So on that going to the expanded form, it works like that. But the compaction for type is magical, and I cannot control it with the keyword definition.
Right. Now, I could imagine us doing something, for instance, to be able to say at type container set, which would control the way the compaction worked to make sure that at type was always expressed as an array, which would be something of a special case.
Yeah, but again, you could do exactly the same thing without redefining at type, but just defining type.
Yeah, and I'm fine either way. I just want to be able to do it either way. In the third example, I use type without the at sign.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing I'm after. So I want compaction to be able to, given the context in the third form, compact to the expression in the third form.
Now, the interesting thing in the third form, you've got type with an ID and then two properties, which, of course, makes an object whose subject is the ID of that type.
Yes.
Yeah.
Those are the labels of the type.
Right. So that, there's nothing either that will work. And if that solves your use case, then we can do that with no further change.
Okay. So it does work with the algorithm. I thought that type in that case was less specific than at type.
It is less specific. It doesn't have meaning into JSON LD. It's just another property.
Yeah. But will the algorithm pick that up if you go from RDF to a compact form? Or will at type sort of overshadow?
Oh, I see. That would be a question for the 2RDF algorithm, and the way it's written right now, there's nothing that would cause it to pick up an alias for at type.
Right. Could we strive to make that happen?
It could only be done when you apply a context to it. So the result of doing the from triples basically creates an expanded graph. So there is no context associated with it. You'd need something that happened during expansion that saw at type and expanded it to a local type definition. I don't see that happening.
Yeah, I'm really concerned that this is doing something like that would really, really complicate the expansion algorithm, because we'd be adding in another mechanism where you could kind of inject a context while expansion's happening. The other thing I'm concerned about is that this use case seems to be a fairly esoteric use case, at least as for, I mean, I don't know. I know that Nicholas, you have this concern, but the idea that you can round trip through RDF and end up with specifically the type being treated in a special way like this is a bit strange.
Well, this is. It's not. It's type being treated as any other relation. The current way treats type very specifically, very specially, from an RDF point of view.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is that the type that you're expressing in your third example is different from what people normally do when they express a type. Normally, when you express a type, you just give it an IRI. What you're doing is you're actually associating it with an object. You're not just specifying RDF type. You're making an association with a whole bunch of other data.
Yeah, but that's how I use type often in RDF. And in this example, it would be beneficial if you want to index JSON and then search for the type of objects with the natural language label.
Right, but I guess
you could do this with framing.
Right,
I think you could do it with framing.
But the other thing is that I don't think that your this type that you're using here is very different from RDF type. I think the pattern, the usage pattern, is very different. So when so for example in Turtle, I don't think that when people say, let's say they're describing a person, they go object foo a, and they usually do something like foo person. They don't
but
object foo a and.
But that doesn't apply because in Turtle I express the semantics, and I cannot nest a reference and the descriptions of that reference in Turtle at all. In Turtle you can't express things as you do them syntactically in JSON-LD at all because you have
that's
nesting.
Correct, but I guess the question I have is why is it so important for you to do that in a nested fashion in this case? When there's a solution via framing and there's a solution through just doing what you're doing here, just do type and then refer to an object.
But Niklas, how do you currently convert from RDF to JSON-LD?
With I have one Python implementation which is lagging behind, but which is striving to be compliant with the JSON-LD algorithm. That's the goal of it. And in the other case, I have just a Groovy code to do what I need to get to index in Elasticsearch.
Because I think if you kind of have that use case, you can still convert it to JSON-LD. It's still valid JSON-LD. It's just you convert it in a different way. You take your RDF and take convert it to a different JSON-LD, but that's not uncompliant.
Yeah.
It's just
yeah.
an optimized JSON-LD output in this case, I would say.
Yeah, of course, but I wouldn't be able to reproduce that shape of JSON just by applying a JSON-LD context because the spec wouldn't support this shape.
But you can do it with a frame. Because
yeah,
if you have objects that are defined in there, such as your type ID and labels, then you could create a frame that has your type property that references something. You'd need to give type. You'd need to use a pattern where it had some subset of properties, or you'd actually need to give type a type, and then you could frame it in order to give the kind of structure to the data you want.
Right.
I guess the other alternative is that you could actually list type twice. So you can do at type and just give it the full URL that you have there, and then you could also have type that explains what the type is in more detail.
That's what the framing would look like. Yeah.
Yeah, but I would expect compaction to work like that with the context which defines type explicitly as a regular term.
It depends on what you're. Well, let's see. I'm trying to think of how.
I'd have
to look into it. I think the key thing with this, at least what I'm coming away with this discussion, is that we need to support what Niklas is saying, but I'm not convinced that we need to actually change the spec to do that. Or if we do end up changing the spec, it ends up being very, very complicated. It's not a simple change to the spec.
The other question here is, why do we treat type differently than other properties?
That's the gist of my question, really. Because if I define a term for the relation which happens to be type, I don't mind that at type steps in and does its magic to create what is essentially the same thing as the first form being explicitly defined, and having that built in, because that's a good thing in general. It's a simple case of type. But if I want to express type as a regular term and or use a container set definition somehow to have predictable shapes I think that it would be more uniform if the compaction would support it, just as for any other relation.
Okay. Well, I guess so, the reason that we treat type differently is because it does something very different from what language. At least type in an object does something very different from what something like language or value does. So, but I think
that's an overrided version of type. Type is always treated differently in the context of being in a value versus in a object definition. Looking at just the object definition, it is not unreasonable to ask why at type is treated differently than other properties. In fact, it would simplify a lot of the processing, at least in expansion and compaction, if that type was just another property. It probably creates some issues for framing, where the framing, I think, expects it to be in a particular pattern. But otherwise, I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah.
We should take it off list, I think. And I'm sure Dave Longley would want to chime in on this.
Yeah.
Someone in the list quite some time ago also asked for some way to do what the second example illustrates, namely to say that type should always be given in a list. Maybe that was only for expansion, though. I'm not sure, and I don't remember who it was.
Okay. All right. So we need to take this off. We need to take this off off our current discussion and take it onto the list. I think I think it's fine if we decide that all keywords can't be overridden except for at type in an object, because that is a special case. I'm a bit concerned about saying that. I know it's more consistent, but when you go and teach it to authors, it's not going to feel consistent to them.
I agree with you in the. I think that we could solve this, but we have to be careful so we don't complicate things. One way I'm thinking of doing it is that always support the at type form as we currently use it, and if someone explicitly defines a term, not overrides at type, but defines another term for it, like in the third example here, then it should be treated like any other property if appearing.
That's too much special magic.
Yeah.
But I think we either demote type to be just like any other property, or you use framing. It's one of the two.
Well, in that case, I'd expect the first example to be part of an explicit context. Implicit default context.
Mm-hmm.
Which would only be true. Well, yeah. But
we would have to extend the IRI.
That would be the thing. If that was the case, then in expansion you'd expect the IRIs to be expanded. And for that matter, it would allow you to use any object, including recursive definitions for type, which currently is just an ID. So it might work okay, but
well, the other issue is what happens when you use that type in an object. That means that then all of a sudden some magic kicks in to say that at type's ignored in that case.
Yeah,
right?
but all of that illustrates that we already have very special casing, and we know that.
Mm-hmm.
And when we view it from the perspective where type is just a relation, it backfires a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I think, that's if you look from it from an RDF perspective, but if you look at it from a JSON perspective, it's the other way around, I would say.
Well, I'm not sure, because if you look at it from a linked data perspective, which JSON-LD, regardless of RDF, represents. Type represents a link.
Mm-hmm.
and you can have that as a subject. And you can should be able to have multiple types, and you are able to have multiple types, unlike other relations, you currently can't say that you should always have it as a container set.
Well, but that's...
Well, the other thing is, if we were to turn type back into a property, then we should consider changing the use of at type and values and in the context definitions back to data type, which frankly does complicate the algorithms because it has to treat it differently.
I didn't quite catch that, Greg. What do you mean? What's being treated differently?
Type is basically means two different things depending upon where it's used,
mm-hmm.
And because of that, it complicates expansion and compaction. Because in one case, you've got to say if it's type, then it might be in a value, in which case it doesn't put into an array form. In another case, it's put into an array form potentially. So if it was at data type, then that would simplify the algorithms because we wouldn't have to treat it any differently. We wouldn't have to special case the code. It would remove the conflation that other people have noted in sort of distinguishing between object types and literal data types. And then it would also pave the way if we decided we wanted to remove the special treatment of at type and objects to be just like other properties. It would sort of allow us to just remove special processing other than to consider that the default context has the first definition that Nicholas put there, also allowing the second definition potentially that allows you to make sure that it's always expressed as an array.
So your proposal is we would reintroduce data type, and then at type would stop being this special thing. It would just be another thing in the initial context, right?
I haven't gone so far as to propose that, but I think that is what should be discussed. I want to be sure that Dave Longley has a chance to chime in on this. That's why I'm saying, I put a little comment in the on the issue. We should take this off. We should take this back to the list and deal with it, and perhaps talk about it again next week.
But
yeah,
if we go that direction, why do we keep at type then at all? Then it's just a normal property that you can define yourself if you need it.
Framing needs something like type.
Well, doesn't need it really.
Well, I think
you don't have type in your data, you can't use it in framing, so it's just another property.
So I think the real reason we have that type is that people have come to expect it in Turtle and other things. They want a quick way of saying this is the type of the object, and it is a little it is a little different in that many people make programmatic choices. The code's written against types to check some things type and then do something based on off that type. It's a convenience thing. It's not required. You're right, Marcus. It's not required, but for convenience, people tend to use it.
So some kind of predefined sugar for it is probably useful. The potential occurrence of multiple types, which is very quite common in certain domains, would make code have to handle the difference between set and just one value. If we allow this change somehow, they would be able to control it. But I think I'm happy with what we have discussed now because we've sort of clarified the issues I see with the current situation, and we have some ideas about how to investigate this further.
Okay. So we're basically leaving this issue hanging out here.
It depends on if you have strong opinions of what to or to not to do.
Well, I guess the only strong opinion I have is to make sure that we don't make things more complicated, meaning author complexity author complexity is the first thing that I'm concerned about. We don't make things too complicated for authors. And it could mean that I'm starting to rethink our decision of making at type and at data type, merging those two things together. I think that we've seen people that are new to JSON-LD make the same mistake over and over again, which is, and I only have like four data points for this, but it's they think that they conflate at type used in an object with at type used outside, or at type used in expanded form versus at type used in an actual object. They get confused by it. So the idea would be to reintroduce data type and type, because they are two different things, and we thought that the nuance was so small that it didn't matter, but it seems like it does start to matter. And this, what Nicholas has just raised, is another reason for us to reconsider introducing data type back in. If we did that, then add type would be just like any other property. The code complexity would be reduced because you wouldn't have to figure out what context at type is being used in. And it seems like we would support what Nicholas outlines in this issue.
But the same issue basically applies to at data type as well. You could have exactly the same construct for at data type.
Well, I don't understand.
I think at data type becomes like at language and things like that.
Right.
It has fixed semantics. It always means the same thing.
Right, and you can't redefine it.
No, but I'm saying like in RDF, you put an IRI at the end of that. So if you would like to keep the label for that data type in there, you could end up with the same object structure for that data type as well. It's not that that's really that different.
But it is in RDF, it is that different because you don't create a quad for it. You merge it into the data type expression. And if you want to use an expanded form, you would use RDF value. And, well, I don't know if there is a URI defined for data type as a property.
Yeah, but, I mean, the graph is still the same. It's serialized differently because you don't have a predicate in RDF for the data type.
I think if in as much as there is an expanded form using value, then it is the type of that object, the thing that's referenced. But that's that's another issue.
I see the point. But even in JSON schema, there is a difference between the data type given. You provide a lexical definition for a scalar and a relation to an object type, which is sort of a contract for the shape and properties allowed in a specific object construct. So even in JSON schema, which has nothing to do with RDF, there is this distinction.
Is there?
Yeah, it's more subtle, but in RDF it's so explicit that it's almost annoying. But it's the same nuance difference is there.
Mm-hmm. No, really? Like, I think you can just set the type to either one of the scalar types or object, right?
Let me. I'm going to have
like,
to find.
Can you really type it to something?
Okay.
Yeah, there's like.
We're 40 minutes into the call now,
yeah,
and we're on the first issue.
Yeah,
I think we
yeah.
should backburner this and kind of move on. I think we've raised a number of issues with this that we're going to need to revisit when we're done with all the other syntax issues, and then we're just going to have to make a decision on this. I think right now I'm actually leaning towards reintroducing data type, but that's without having discussed any of this with Dave Longley or looking at how it impacts the implementations. Nicholas, would reintroducing data type and basically having add type be in something like the initial context resolve this issue for you?
Yes, I think so.
Okay. And I think that the knock-on effect of doing that might make JSON-LD simpler for authors as well.
But that would also... require that we allow to redefine keywords?
Well, I guess what we would say is that at type is not a keyword. It's just syntactic sugar.
We do allow keywords to be. There should be a warning in there that warns people about doing it, but we do allow. Remember, we decided, and you corrected my update, that a prefix or a term could be any JSON string, which does include something with that has the pattern of a keyword.
Yeah, well, that's true. But at least I, for example, exclude it in the context of processing at the moment. So if there is that type or something, I just ignore that.
Yeah, I don't.
So we'll definitely need a decision on that. Okay. Do we want to backburn this just for the meantime and move on? Because quite obviously, the issue is getting larger and larger as we discuss it. It's not getting more and more refined.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
well, I don't know. We could maybe put a proposal if we allow term redefinitions or not, if we kind of agree on that.
I don't know enough about the impact of that to be able to vote on it right now.
Okay.
I really think we need Dave Longley's input on this, because
right.
Particularly when it comes to framing, I think it has some broad implications there.
Okay, so postponing issue on issue 91, or postponing decision on issue 91, topics that we need to address. What are the topics that we need to address? We need to see if we want to reintroduce data type. 2, if term definitions, or I guess if keywords can be redefined. 3, what else are we discussing here? I guess if there is an initial context that specifies that type. What other issues did we discuss? So the three issues we're talking about is if we want to reintroduce data type, if keywords can be redefined, and if there's initial context that specifies at type.
Allowing at type to be treated just like any other property.
Okay, so we probably want to turn each one of those into an issue and discuss them separately. Nicholas, is this? How about this, Nicholas? Are those three issues? If we created issues out of them, could we close issue 91?
Let me see.
I think so. I believe that you know the spec algorithm much better than I do at the moment. So if you feel so, it seems so from what I can interpret.
Unfortunately, I don't know the spec. I don't know the algorithm anymore because Dave Longley's the one that implemented the new. He just went through in the last 2 weeks and re-implemented all the algorithms to work with the decisions we've made in the past. And
right.
So I'm very much detached from all of the algorithms at this point. Greg, I think, knows more about the algorithms if he's done an implementation in the last 2 weeks. Okay. Let's keep issue 91 open for now, and we can close it if we feel that we've answered. If we answer those three questions and we feel those apply to issue 91, then we can close issue 91 at that point. Okay, next up, issue 92, limiting JSON LD properties to have one list per property. The reason that this is being proposed is because if we do anything else, it becomes kind of a, the algorithm becomes kind of a mess for no really good reason. So basically what Greg, Dave Longley, and I had a very long discussion about this a couple of a week or so ago. So this has to do with supporting lists of lists and properties that contain a list of something that includes sets and lists. And what we have found, at least what I think Greg Kellogg and Dave Longley have found, is that supporting this is, one, very difficult. Algorithmically, it's very difficult and introduces quite a bit of complexity. And because of that, we're thinking that we probably shouldn't support it for now. But we may need to support it in the future, so we need to actually throw an exception if somebody puts two lists in an array of properties. So basically what we're saying is in JSON-LD, you can have a property, and that property can point to a JSON array. That JSON array must only contain one list value in it. If it contains more than one, then you have to throw an exception. Does that, Greg, you're on the queue.
Yeah, there's actually two issues going on here. One is what you just said, is that a property can have at most one list associated with it, which I am fine. I think that is a sane decision. And you might even extend that to say that if there is a list coercion on a property, then even something that was not an array would be put into a list, which would be even more consistent as well. I think the issue.
I didn't get that.
Well, that was just. Okay. Yeah. So you might say that if a property that had list coercion on it was presented something that was not in array form, that might also be put into a list, something to consider that would be consistent with the use of lists otherwise. Yeah. But the main thing is, what is the representation in expanded form? So presuming if we can split this at least in two issues, one is, can a property have at most one list associated with it? And two is the representation then that of an object with that list or an array containing a single object with that list? And it was that point that I was not in full agreement with you and Dave on. Because that now creates a pattern which is different than everything else that we expand. Now, as I recall, the reasoning was if we showed it in an array form, then it sort of implies that there could be more than one element. And by having its expanded form be that of an object, it's clear that there can only be one. But it is otherwise an exception for the way that values are treated when they're in expanded form, and as such does require some additional complexity in the processing algorithms.
And also creates a special case if you read such a document.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess there's a future concern about whether or not that's forward compatible with if we need to support multiple lists potentially.
I can't imagine a use case that's going to really cause us to reopen that. If we were to do that, then we'd have to reopen list of lists.
Right. Exactly.
They're just not used that in that way, in my experience.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So hold on. Let me read. There's a proposal that Dave Longley puts in here, and Greg, I'm going to try and understand where you differ with that proposal. So a JSON LD property must not have more than one list value. If a property has a list value that uses the list keyword, then the property must be an object with a list key. If the list keys value must be an array with the ordered values, the list keys value must be an array with the ordered values for the property. The property may use a rule in the context to specify that its values are in a list container, in which case the property value will be an array containing the property's ordered values. I'm getting lost with this proposal. A property value that is an array must not contain list or set. It must not contain the list or set keyword, which does not apply to deeply embedded subjects. The expanded form of a list value is a single object, not an array. This proposal is thoroughly confusing to me.
Well, yes, it is confusing, but I think that I'm in agreement up to that very last bit about the expanded form being a single object, not an array.
Greg, could you maybe just quickly explain what's the problem with multiple lists per property? Is that in compaction? Or where do you see the problem?
So if you have, you might have multiple properties that have, that that expand to the same IRI, and you use them as each of them defines a list. Then when you go to merge, basically the arrays are being merged, so it creates some confusion about if it's really two different lists or if it's multiple values in a single list.
You're talking about complexity
so,
now.
In expansion.
Well, in the expansion, you would still have the different list objects, so they wouldn't be. There would be, let's say, three list at list objects in an array.
Yeah, I think when we were talking about it, and it'd have to go and decipher our IRC conversation some more, but we were worried about cases in which there would be some conflation, and it would appear that you had separate lists when in fact you had a single list or vice versa. And the result of that was to have to agree on a restriction that a property really can only have one list associated with it, which was fine with me because I don't see a use case that requires any more than one list in any case. So if you take that as a premise, then that was where Dave went on, I believe, and said, well, in that case, the representation is that of a single object. I would rather see it as an array containing a single object so that it's consistent with everything else. But that was the reasoning that went up to that. So I don't think we really want to go into the details of can we really, is there a way that you could express multiple lists for a single property that wasn't ambiguous? I think for the time being we should just assert that as a premise, and if that's the case, then what should the representation be? If someone has a compelling use case to allow multiple lists for a property, then we can re-examine that whole thing, in which case we'd have a representation that would allow us to do that. And then the third one would be, well, lists containing lists, which is where, when I was doing the processing, it got to be extremely complicated.
Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yeah, this is really, I think that I agree with most of these things from a practical point of view. I just know one very strange real-world use case of lists in RDF, and it's the, I paste the link here, the spin RDF, where they express sparkle in notation 3 or turtle. I really do not expect people to express sparkle in RDF in JSON LD. I don't. But you never know. So the exception to throw an exception. In this case, in the example I linked to, they use a list of lists. So I don't know if they ever use multiple lists for a property, but that could probably happen in that notation. So we should know that there is at least one case where we should guard against someone accidentally trying to use it.
And so your argument is we should throw an exception in that case if we go with the idea that we don't support lists of lists?
Yeah, just so that if you try, you know that JSON-LD doesn't support that expression.
Yeah.
Instead of destroying the data for it, which might happen otherwise.
Could we maybe split that into two sub-issues, one for compaction and one for expansion? Because I think in expansion it's quite straightforward to express it, and it's, on the other hand, quite difficult to detect such a pattern. While in compaction there could be some issues, and it's easier to detect the pattern there. So what I mean with that is, in expansion, you would have to do kind of a pre-processing to check if there are two lists, or that two lists collide. While
why don't
in
we just not? Why don't we just not support it, rather than trying to come up with more special cases? I think we have far too many special cases.
No, I'm trying to avoid the special cases. Because
yeah,
right
so I
now
think if
you
we
just merge it into the array, and that's it. You merge that at-list object into an array, and there is no special case for that.
But I guess the question is in which order.
Well, an array is unordered in JSON-LD.
Right.
Yeah.
But what if that property had an at list? It's specified as a container of at list.
Well, we don't have a container in expanded form because we dropped the context.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is what happens when someone says that if you have a property foo, and foo is a container with that is a list, that's an ordered list, and then you have two foos defined using two different terms, right? Both of them are at list. Then what's the order that you put them in?
I would have two distinguished lists which are put in an array. So I have an array of two at list objects.
That's not the question I'm asking. What I'm saying is that if there's a property foo, and foo is supposed to be an at list, right? And then someone defines two new properties, foo1 and foo2. They're both associated with that property, right?
So you mean they expand to the same array?
Yeah, yeah. Then what order does the list go in? I guess the point I'm trying to make is it's non-deterministic because JSON keys don't have an order, so there is no way to do that.
You wouldn't merge the lists, but you would end up with three lists. With three different lists.
I guess, if you're compacting.
Well, that's the thing. That's why I would like to split it. When compacting, there could be issues, but in expansion, there is really no issue at all. And it's kind of difficult to even detect that use, or that there are multiple lists without doing pre or post-processing.
I'm wondering if we should also push this issue off.
That's why I wanted to split it. I'd like to see a resolution of the representation in expanded form, because that's in the way, that's in my way right now.
Mm-hmm.
The tests are written to be in conflict with what's right here. The tests are written so that lists are always in arrays.
Right.
So the
proposal would be in expanded form, lists are always lists just match the same pattern. They're always embedded in an array.
Yeah, so they are represented as an array with a single object containing a list keyword.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's consistent with the way the algorithm is written now and that the tests are written and with my original thoughts.
Greg, like the example I wrote?
Yes.
Yeah. It's not cute, but I see the... it's predictable.
Okay. So the proposal is when performing expansion properties that are coerced to a container type of at list must be placed in an array in expanded form. For example, that is correct. So is this right?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you know, Greg, why Dave Lonely was arguing for that second?
I think the main thing is he thought that if it was an array form, that it was implicit that there could be more than one, and by making it an object form, it was clear that it could not be more than one.
Okay.
But it ends up creating more special cases for us, and therefore, you know, using the dictum of trying to be as simple as possible, let's try to keep the data normalized. Yeah. So that's my biases tend towards simplification.
Okay. Yeah, I'm the only thing I'm concerned about is that it has an impact on framing or something like that.
Lists were only recently added to framing, so okay. No, I don't believe so.
Okay. All right, is there anything else that we should discuss on this property? We can't close the property, this issue. Is there anything else that we need to discuss on this issue? I don't think we can close it because there are a lot of things that Dave Longley outlined in his proposal, and I it's really difficult for me to follow what he means with each of those.
Maybe he could add some explicit examples where the problems are, because I'm not sure I completely understood the problem either.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. What we need is examples that illustrate how, with the algorithms, it leads to confusion.
Okay. Okay. So we're just moving on. We need more information on this issue. Next up is issue 93, keyword aliasing.
Within the context, is this? No.
Yeah, this is this is Marcus's raised four questions on keyword aliasing and how it works. The first question is, can multiple aliases exist for a keyword? The second one is aliasing of context disallowed? The third one is, are alias keywords supported within the context? So do aliases only apply outside the context, or does it work inside the context as well? And how are aliases processed during the expansion and compaction? Marcus, do you want to...
No, I just wanted to say that I think we already agree, at least Greg and Dave and me, we kind of discussed it in the issue already. So for me, it's like kind of clear now. And I think for Greg and Dave as well, but I don't know, maybe you would like to have a look at it, what we kind of came up with.
I think I mostly agree. Hold on, I'm trying to describe this. I think I mostly agree with the discussion. Could multiple aliases exist for a keyword? Yes. I think that's fine. Is aliasing of context disallowed? That one I'm a little less clear on. I haven't actually been able to read the entire conversation that you guys had. Are alias keywords supported within the context? I'd say no. And then how is it processed during context processing, expansion, compaction? And I defer to Dave Longley and Greg on that. Did you guys, Marcus, at the end, did you agree with them that context specification is disallowed?
I think I was the only one to say we shouldn't introduce a special case for that, but again, I think I agree now that we shouldn't allow that, but because you would have to expand all properties first, and if you don't allow keyword aliasing of context, you just have to check for that as context in the data. And
okay.
In the end, it doesn't make much sense to alias context anyway, because if you're talking about JSON-LD, add context is kind of the most basic thing in JSON-LD.
Okay, so you agree with Dave Longley and Greg on...
Yes.
...on context should be disallowed.
So for me, it would be fine to just close that issue as well.
Okay. Well, let's get a resolutions down, because these are questions that I don't know if we necessarily have resolutions for them.
Four proposals.
Yep. Okay, so the proposal... So the first proposal is JSON-LD supports multiple aliases, or right, for a keyword, can multiple aliases exist for a keyword? JSON-LD supports multiple aliases for a particular JSON, for a JSON-LD keyword. So JSON-LD supports multiple aliases for a JSON-LD keyword? I think that's clear.
Yeah.
JSON-LD keyword. The second one is... the aliasing of context is disallowed due to...
We're just reaffirming that, because it's already disallowed.
Oh, okay. Reaffirm that the alias of context is disallowed due to algorithmic complexity. Is it non-deterministic, or is it just complex to support context aliasing?
There is some ambiguity for if you're applying a context to an existing document.
I would imagine that ambiguity would be able to be resolved if we made a whole bunch of complicated decisions.
I think the real argument is that what's the purpose for aliasing of keywords? And it's really to support legacy documents that have a pattern very similar to JSON-LD, such that aliasing can allow them to be considered JSON-LD. The fact that context explicitly points to a JSON LD document means that it can't be legacy.
Yeah. If we voted for number three first, we would probably easily see why, but I think we will anyway. So.
Yeah. Well, let me go ahead. So reaffirming that the aliasing in context is disallowed due to algorithmic complexity and beauty and lack of a compelling use case. Okay, so that's resolved. Third proposal is alias keywords are only applicable outside of a JSON LD context. Is there a better? I'm saying alias keywords are only applicable outside of a JSON LD context. But there's probably a better way to say that. Are only processed.
A context is processed without regard to keyword aliasing. And
just keyword aliases. Okay.
And a serialized context does not include any aliases for keywords used to express the context.
I'm a bit, so there's a, that could be misread by saying that the aliases aren't produced in a serialized context. Let's see. Serialized context does not use any aliases.
Do we ever produce a serialized context? We always just put an input context into the output document without modifying it.
I think there's some cases where we do. I mean, I certainly have code to do it.
Yeah. There's context optimization that could modify it in such a way when doing something like compaction. I forget the decision we made on that, but I think you're still allowed to create contexts, right?
That's probably for the optimized case.
Yeah. Okay, proposal of context is processed without regard to keyword aliases, and a serialized context does not use any aliases for keywords when used to express the context. That's still a bit confusing. A context is processed.
The first part of the sentence includes the second one anyway, I think.
Yeah.
If the context is not processed with aliases, also the serialization will not be processed with that.
Yeah, I think that's probably fine. Yeah.
Okay, so a context is processed without regard to keyword aliases. Keyword aliases are taken into account when processing the body of a JSON LD document. Is that what we want? Context is processed. Okay, so that's resolved. And then the last one, last one's a bit trickier, right?
The algorithms are written now, so I don't know if we need a resolution on that.
Okay. Well, I guess then this is a no change. The processing rules are not affected. The processing rules for expansion and compaction are not affected by these decisions.
Yes.
Okay. Group notes that the processing rules for compaction, expansion, and framing are not affected by these decisions by previous three decisions. Okay. See, moving on. So that's 93. Okay, so I think that closes out this issue, yes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Next up is issue 99, grass treatment when expanding.
So there's been some discussion on this lately, and I think that everyone agrees that the only time that graph is dropped is when it is the only property expressed in a top-level object other than context.
Put the proposal at the very bottom of that issue.
Oh.
Which says basically the
same. Yes, that's right.
Yeah. I guess the one concern I have, so the proposal is if graph is the only property in a document's top-level object, it must be dropped in expansion and compaction. In all other cases, which includes graph at the document's top-level object, when there are other properties at the same level, graph must not be dropped in expansion and compaction.
Other than context.
Other than context, right.
Okay.
So my concern is that we are now allowing graph in a non-top level object. Is that right?
We're not excluding it. We haven't defined any semantics for it.
Right.
And I do in fact have text in the syntax document that describes what that means.
So I think it's time
to do that, actually. I think it's
so
time.
It makes me very sad. No, I mean it's good. It's just it's gonna eat up a lot of time, I think.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, the
I mean it only is.
We will agree quickly. I feel that.
Well, I think it comes to when you turn it into RDF. What does it mean? But I think within JSON LD, it doesn't really affect the expansion, compaction, or framing. It only has an effect when you turn it into RDF or you turn RDF back into JSON-LD.
Yeah, that's what I'm concerned about. I think we will be able to come to a decision very quickly so that the RDF working group could potentially drive us into the ground by discussing it for multiple months.
Well, I think that they're honing in on the semantics of what that means, but so far it has had very little impact on any syntax, at least where it comes to n-quads or trig. So I don't really see this as being particularly controversial there. Perhaps it could be that if JSON-LD allows bnodes to be used for graph names, that would be inconsistent with RDF, but JSON-LD already allows a superset of RDF. So I don't see it's really any different in that case.
Hmm. Yeah, well, I guess the other thing that this impacts is the normalization algorithm, because if we have graphs, then now we're going to have to start dealing with quads. And
that's right. But it should be straightforward, particularly if bnodes are not used, then it really shouldn't affect the bnode normalization. But even if they are used, it just falls into the existing pattern. So I don't think it's going to be that big a deal. But it does mean that we're expressing quads and our algorithms that currently talk about two triples from triples probably should be two statements from statements in case we go to quints sometime.
Yeah. It's just that, this is the can of worms that I was afraid that we were going to.
The Wikidata people really need a way to be able to express some information like this, and that's sort of what convinced me that it was time to do this, because we don't want to not be used by an important application because we haven't yet gotten to an issue which is in front of everyone anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
okay, going back to the proposal, this means that if we adopt this proposal, then we're going to have to solve the graphs and JSON-LD issue. Does anyone have a strong feeling against us taking on that work, because it is going to push this stuff out again? We're pushing it out. We're pushing it out to the point that it may be difficult for the RDF working group to actually take on this work if it ends up outlasting their charter. Then again,
well,
I
said, I don't really see that. I don't see it that it represents a big complication to any of our algorithms. In fact, what this proposal says is that there's only one special case for dealing with graph versus any other property, and that is in the top level, which is consistent with the way we were using it anyway.
Right.
It's just when it's used in another context, it just says we'll treat it like any other property, really.
Right. Yeah.
It's the interpretation when it comes to RDF, and so far I'm really the only one who has weighed in on any of the RDF algorithms, and I don't really see it as being a big issue.
Right. Okay. Okay. So I'm going to go ahead and put Marcus's proposal in here, and let's see. Okay,
with the
addition
of the context.
Right. Yep. So
yeah, just updated that, so just refresh the page.
Oh, okay.
Okay, great.
Okay, so the proposal is that. Yeah, it was the same way. All right, there we go. So that's resolved, and that means that we're going to have to discuss how to do graphs correctly in JSON-LD.
So I encourage people to look at the text I added to the syntax, and then we could perhaps discuss that if necessary on the list and next week.
Yeah. All right. Okay, I think those were all the issues that affected the syntax, I believe. Station API calls, framing, extension. Yeah, so everything else that we're going to be discussing now is an API issue.
All right, that's good, because I think that I have to go.
Okay. Thanks for sticking on the call, Nicholas.
Oh, thank you, too. Talk to you later.
Take it easy.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, so those were all discussions related to syntax issues. Okay, so the next topic up is specifying the active context for compaction. And I think what we're thinking with this issue, let me open these up. We had it so that the active context that was used for compaction was just the context that was passed in. Now I think Dave Longley has rewritten the API so that the active context during expansion is an API parameter. But what we're finding is we're needing more and more API parameters as time goes on. So we need base. Right, for an API parameter, and we need the active context, and we need a variety of different things that change the signature for the API calls. So
we should use options more.
Yes, exactly. So the proposal would be just to have an option that you pass in. So you call the method, and then the last parameter is the set of options that you're passing in, or the first parameter is a set of options that you're passing in. And those include the base PyRI, the compacting context, if it's being passed to compact, and a variety of different things. So that makes...
Optimize. The first parameter should be input.
Okay, right.
And then I think if everything basically takes an input document and a hash of options, it simplifies these things. Because I know when we added a flag to compact for optimize, it broke so much stuff because my signatures were off.
Right. Okay, so we're starting to have a great number of options.
But are you saying now that we should move also add context to options and so everything except input?
Yep. Yeah, basically.
I don't think that's a really good idea.
Why not?
I would say the mandatory parameter should be on its own, and all the optional could be go to into an options object. But like in compaction,
well,
the context
you could, you could argue that option that the compacting context isn't really required. It's not really required, right?
Well, otherwise it's expansion. So the only difference then is actually the context.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that's a mandatory parameter, and that's so it should be in the method signature.
Well, what
so
about
what,
base?
Which one? Yeah, which one has mandatory? Are you saying that context is a mandatory option to compact? I think that's the only one that otherwise. A frame is a mandatory argument to frame.
Yes.
Yeah.
But what
because
about,
like
what about
in
base?
Most of the cases, I don't need the options, so I don't have to create an array or something for that, or an object for that, and then I can call the methods with just the normal parameters.
What about base though?
Sorry?
The base isn't optional either, right?
No, I think base is an option. Because if I take an input, which is an IRI, then that is what I use for a base. It's only the case when I want to process the document as if it's from a different IRI, then I need to pass base.
But I'm confused. What if you pass in just a regular JSON-LD object?
Then, and if I want it to be processed with base, I would have to pass an option for that. But if I pass in, I mean, for most cases, I'm passing an IRI. So if I'm in a distiller, I'm getting an IRI.
But this isn't that case, though, right? Like, where does the base IRI get set?
I think that's why base is an option, is because if you use an IRI, then base is not necessary since it is implied from the IRI you're using. If it's not an IRI, then you can specify an optional base parameter to set what it would be.
Okay.
But at least currently, the input parameter is an object, a JSON-LD object, not an IRI. I think
in my case, it's either an object, a hash, or an array.
Okay, so that's a change. To the API.
And not an object, it's an IO rather, which meaning that it's a open file. That's just the way that my implementations work.
Yeah, we need to be very specific about that in the API doc. So that's new, right? I'm not saying it's bad. I'm saying it's new, and we need to now kind of discuss that. Because I'm looking at something like a C++ API or a C API for this. And it would be very difficult to, it would be somewhat difficult to do that.
I see.
Or it would be hard to specify that in the same way that we specified for a language like Python or Ruby. So that's the only concern I have, is how exactly do we specify that, or whether we do that, or whether it's outside of the scope of the library. Okay, hold on. Let me scribe some of this stuff.
I think if we want to keep the method signatures that they take an object, although we should say object or array for any of these things.
Well, another question that kind of strikes me is, do we really need to define those method signatures in the specification?
Yes.
What's the reason for that?
Because if we want browsers to implement this stuff, that's the whole reason you have an API spec, is so that you have an interoperable set of method calls. So one of the things we can do is just have a, this is what the API should do, and we don't describe the method signatures. But it's very, very typical for W3C specs to describe exactly what the method signature should be across multiple languages. And they even have a language called WebIDL that describes how you do that. When you get into more dynamic languages and doing what, like Greg's doing in Ruby, it becomes fairly difficult to do that in C. So you usually end up specifying two different APIs, one for dynamic languages and one for languages that aren't really dynamic. If that makes
sense. But then we should specify whether we are talking about browser APIs or like if that should apply to every JSONLD processor out there.
This is what WebIDL is for, because it's not just for JSON. There's mappings for WebIDL to most other languages. So I think it is a standard way of expressing APIs, and I believe that specs like this do need APIs. Now, there is a question of if it's expressed properly or it can be. For instance, the input and result for many of these things can either be an object or an array of objects. And you can't actually express that entirely well in the WebIDL implemented by Respec, for instance. Respec 2 might do it, but Respec has a problem with it.
Right.
So I've got some issues
in
there.
Things. For example, some languages don't have exceptions or like callbacks, which are in C, not that trivial without doing threading.
Yeah, this is an issue for WebIDL. And this is the way that you do it in W3C spec. So I don't think this is the place to debate whether WebIDL can express that properly for the various languages. And it's not necessarily the case that everyone that implements JSON-LD has to implement the JSON-LD API if it's not going to be used in the context that exposes. But if you do, if you want to claim that you are supporting the JSON-LD API, then this would set out the type of conformance requirements.
Yeah. Okay. So let's rewind.
Yeah.
So I guess what we could do is we could have this discussion. We could have this discussion with the assumption that we're talking about higher level libraries higher level languages like Ruby and Python and Perl and JavaScript. And based on that, we can pass in arguments that are strings or hashes or different things like that. We can also say whether parameters are optional or not, and what to do when, for example, if we're passing in a string, which is an IRI as the first argument, then a base is not required. But if you pass in an object and you don't specify the base IRI, then you should throw an exception. The other concern I guess I had was being able to reuse the options that you pass in the context. So for example, if you didn't want to pass in base every single time, you or a set of options, different set of options every single time you call these methods. You could just have an options object and pass that to every single one of the methods that you want. Basically specify, use that options object and pass it to all the compact, expand methods. So you wouldn't have to re-specify a new options object. You just use the same options object for different JSON LD calls. Did that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, so with all this said, do we want to constrain the discussion so that we are talking about high level languages, and that's what we're gonna aim the WebIDOL spec for, and lower level languages are just gonna have to figure out something else, or we're gonna end up having to write a different mechanism for low level languages?
I think we should address browsers with that WebIDOL, because that's what it's made for in the end, isn't it?
No, it's not. What I mean is that it is not specifically for browser engines. It can, if you're careful with the way that you design it, you can also have it apply to Perl and Ruby and Python. And I think that would be if we can do that, I think we should definitely do that. And I think that's perfectly capable. I agree, Marcus, that the first kind of the first class citizen in this case is the browser API, is basically JavaScript. But I think that we don't have to do that much more work to make it work in Python and Ruby and languages.
Yeah, I think that also bears on whether these methods typically return an object or take a callback that is called with the result, which, for instance, allows for an implementation of Compact that can retrieve a remote context or document without blocking,
right?
Which is typical very important JavaScript pattern.
Yep, and it's a typical good design pattern for when you need to go out to the network and get something, right? The whole non-blocking IO thing. Okay. So with all that said, so we're going to focus on higher level APIs specifically for the browser. I guess the question that's up is, Marcus raised the issue of whether or not we should have mandatory arguments as parameters. And Greg's response to that was, what's mandatory is completely dependent on the type of object that you pass in. And so based on that, I think that if that's the case, then we should probably just have an options object that they pass in.
If that's the case, we can just pass an options object to everything. So we don't need, that's the only parameter we need then.
Well, there's a bit of design in here, right? I mean, I don't think that we need to just package absolutely everything up in an object and ship it off. I think it would be good to make a differentiation between what is input data, the data that you're going to process, and then what are the options that you're going to use to process that data. I think that's a right. So one of them is a design extreme. So if we have an options object and we shove everything into there, we might as well, instead of call it options, we might have just call it like the processing object, and just make every single one of our method calls take, one object. And I think it's a bit more nuanced than that, right? I mean, I think we have input data, and we want to process that input data in a certain way. So that would be an argument for effectively having two arguments for each one of these method calls, one of them being the input data and the other one being the...
Yeah, and my argument was that input data are the mandatory parameters. So they are not hidden in the options object.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is that it depends, right? So if you pass in an object, if the input data is an IRI, then you don't need base. If it is an object, then you do need base, right? And so that
you only need base if it's an object. You only need base to resolve relative IRIs, but
right.
Not every document has relative IRIs to be resolved.
Yeah, okay, that's about base. But what about context and compaction, for example?
This indicates it's not, the API currently indicates that it's nullable, indicating that you don't need to pass one in.
Is the idea that
you would use the context, the first context you find in the document, as the context to use for compaction?
Yeah, that's for example one thing that doesn't make any sense to me. So why should I compact the document with the context that is already in the document? Why should I compact it again?
So what my implementation does is it if the context that's specified null, then I just assume that the value specified as an object which contains a context key, and then I use that.
Can you say that again?
So if a context is not provided to the API, then I assume that the input document is an object that contains a context key, and I use that context when compacting the document.
And what's the motivation for that?
I think in many cases you might have a JSON-LD document with a context, and you are just trying to make the data more uniform. So by allowing the compaction algorithm to operate on it, it already specifies a context. It's just using the context that's there in order to optimize the representation of that document.
Then you could just pass the document as both parameters. That would be end up in the same result, but you don't have to do any magic in the implementation.
You could. So another way to say that is, if context is not specified, the input document is used as the context.
Yeah, and that's what I don't like. Because
so
if you
want
to have
that,
you just
implicit.
Pass the input document as the context as well, and then you have exactly that behavior, but you express that you want to have that.
Right. So I guess Marcus's argument is we should be explicit, or the developer should be explicit in which context they want to use rather than implicit.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. That just happened to be what I implemented because I think it made a lot of my internal tests simpler.
Right.
It also means I'm not processing the document twice. Otherwise, I've got to parse the document twice.
Yeah, that depends how you pass it. If you pass it already parsed as a JSON object, you parse it twice.
Well, you can just pass context in, right? I guess what I'm saying is that the context that you pass in the second argument, in Marcus's case, has to be the content of the at context keyword, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so I guess is it not possible to pass, I guess you can't pass an IRI as a context. You can only pass a document that references a separate URL.
You could get more complex.
No,
you could say that it would try and sniff if it can find a top-level key that's at context, then it uses that. Otherwise, it assumes that the object passed in was a context.
The object that is passed in has a top level at context. It's not just the content of that property.
Well, I guess what Greg is saying is that if someone were to pass in a 5 megabyte JSON-LD document, that document, or rather that if they pass in that object, you're passing, I guess it's not that big of a deal. You would just look in the top level.
Well, the problem is we're talking about if the API just takes objects, then it's a little bit moot. But if you look at a web service which is taking URLs for those documents, that service would have to either have its own semantics to say if it's not provided a URL for a context that it uses the document, or it's going to have to load that file twice. And that's not something that you want to have to do.
It just once. If it's the same IRI, you can also just load it once. But I think we should first of all agree what we pass in at all. So are we passing in objects? Are we passing in IRIs? Do we allow both?
I think we allow both. So the reason is we could make this a lot easier on ourselves by saying that we just pass in objects and that it's up to a higher level library to dereference IRIs and resolve them and do all that kind of stuff. The problem with that is that JSON-LD is meant to be kind of a on the web, on the net language, right? So
yeah.
I think it makes sense for people to pass in IRIs and just expect it to just work, mostly because a lot of the data that they're going to have are going to be IRIs, or a lot of the resources that they have are going to be IRIs, and they're going to want to go out to those and kind of look for information at those IRIs.
The only issue is that, and this can be resolved through sniffing. It would also be reasonable to pass in a serialized JSON document, which is a string. So then, if the document could be expressed as a string and a file name is expressed as a string, then you need to sniff it to know whether you're talking about an IRI or a serialized document.
And I think that case we draw the line there, and we just say, look, if you know that what you have is a JSON, is a JSON LD document, just do a JSON parse on it before you pass it in. Because otherwise we're going to interpret it as an IRI.
I think that's reasonable.
Yeah.
So could we make the first resolution on that? Because I think I agree on that as well.
Okay, so hold on. So arguments can be... okay, so we're saying that input parameters... input parameters to the JSON-LD API can be either an IRI or an object, which is...
Or an array of objects.
Or a parsed document.
Yes, a parsed document, which would then either be an object or an array of objects. I believe,
right. Yeah. Well,
that depends upon whether object in WebIDLE refers to really something which is like a hash, a JSON object, or it's more generalized as being sort of a base class for everything.
Well, I think it's not a base class for everything. Well, sorry, they're the same thing, a hash and an object, you would process the keys in the same way is what I'm trying to say.
Okay. So if that's the case, then basically it can be an object or object array.
Okay. So for object array, which method are you thinking needs to take an object array?
All of these.
Oh, I guess you mean an expanded document.
So I can provide compact and expanded document, which is always going to be an object array. The result of compaction can be an object array. Actually, no, it can't be. The input to expand could be an object array. The result is always an object array.
Right.
Same with framing. Framing is always an object array
currently.
which is what's returned. So many of these things can take either an object or an object array and return either an object or an object array. But as my issue in there indicates, you can't specify that in WebIDLE because it blows up.
Right. Okay, so let's say the first input parameter for all JSON-LD API methods may be an object, an array of objects, or an IRI.
An IRI, which is that just a DOM string, or is there another IDLE type for that?
DOM string. They don't have a special type for it, but we can just say IRI and then implement it as a DOM string.
Right.
I just found something. You can define union types in IDLE, and that means you can say it's either an object or an array of objects, for example. So that's one example.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what we have to do.
For.
Yeah.
Well, yes, that's the point. So the union object is used with the parentheses one or the other.
Right.
And if you look at my issue, I said this could be parenthesis object or object bracket bracket, but that doesn't work. So it's possible if you could specify a named type that is that union, then we could use that named type. And that's where I sort of ran out of my WebIDLE mojo.
Okay. Well, I think the we'll figure out how to write in the WebIDLE. In the very worst case, we just say it's an object, and then we specify that the object can be a DOM string as well, or we create.
Right.
There's a way that we can spec this. I think the more important decision is what the first input parameter for all these JSON-LD API methods is. So we're saying that it's an object, an array of objects, or an IRI, which is a DOM string.
Yes.
Right.
And then the other thing is that we probably don't have return types, but they take a callback, similar to the way that two triples does.
Okay, well, that's a different proposal and resolution. So let's do plus one, minus one on this one first. All right, and then, okay, so the other one has, let me look up. We're still discussing Marcus's, what's the active context in compaction. Are we saying that the compact method takes a second argument, that is the context that should be used for compaction?
Would
I think
that's
Marcus'
position. The same
position.
Applies for framing, in my opinion.
Sorry, I didn't hear.
I would say so, and the same applies for framing, and there the second parameter would be the frame. But that's my opinion.
Okay. Greg, would you agree with that or disagree? Or?
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay, all right. So then the proposal is the second input parameter to the compact method is the context that should be used for compaction. The value can be either an object. So it's either an object. It can't be an array of objects or an IRI.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, and then the second input parameter to the frame method is the frame that should be used for compaction. The value can be either an object or an IRI. Do we ever want to specify? We have a MIME type for frames, right? So we could specify an external frame.
That's an IRI.
Yeah. So it's an object or an IRI.
Type, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It can't be an array. Yeah.
Okay.
Oops. I'm sorry. I just plus 20. There we go.
Okay. You can
vote
twice. Okay. So the second input parameter. I should probably push that.
You didn't resolve the previous one.
Oh, whoops. I'll fix that in a minute. See, so second parameter and then the first one. And second parameter for compact solve. Okay. All right, so we're at the top of the hour, and I have to go. Let's see, should context be minimized when compacting? So the remaining issues that we have so far is whether or not context should be minimized when compacting, normalized representation, what we're doing about normalization in JSON-LD, whether or not API calls need... Go ahead.
We could quickly resolve the next issue as well, because I think there's already agreement on that.
Yeah, I think that's exactly. That they should not be minimized.
Yeah, except if the optimized flag is set, and then it's beyond the scope of the spec.
Yeah, all bet exactly. All bets are off then.
Okay. So issue 57.
There's already a proposal in there. Just fast.
If the optimized flag is not set, the context used for compaction must be included without modifications. Resolved. Okay. Is there anything else on there that looks like it might be easy to resolve?
Well, my opinion on 53 is we should remove normalization from JSON-LD and just use the external normalization document.
I agree with that.
Okay, and then the external normalization document would specify how to do it in JSON-LD?
It would specify how to do it in RDF.
Okay. Well, I guess still. Oh, crap.
Hello.
I'm back.
Hello, I'm back as well.
Yeah, I think that normalization was used in framing. The fact that it's not used in framing means we don't need to talk about it. And normalization then becomes an RDF issue.
And if we need it in JSON-LD, we could handle it with from RDF, right? So we just...
Yeah, I think, I don't see a need to have a normalized expression of JSON-LD.
Yeah, I think I agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, in which case, I think the simplest thing is just to remove normalization from the API document.
Yeah.
Right. Let's see. JSON-LD API. Okay, so let me get the issue in here.
Do we have a proposal in there?
Well, I think, I didn't see one, but hold on. So there are a couple of things, a couple of nuances to this. We certainly need to be able to, so the idea here is that the JSON-LD API is not going to specify normalization, but there's going to be another document out there that specifies how normalization is performed for RDF, and then there's going to be another document beside that that specifies the extension to the JSON-LD API that allows you to get a signature for a JSON-LD document.
Well, if the RDF normalization document has an API that allows you to get a signature, then you can do it entirely within there. It doesn't have to do anything with JSON-LD at all.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think ahead of what that API would look like. I mean, the input would, I guess, just be a text of some kind. It would be an object or...
Well, the input to normalization, it's similar to doing, you know, content negotiation, right? It has to support N triples, and it may support other RDF serializations.
Right.
So the algorithm would work by turning the input document into N triples, and then converting that to a normalized N triples representation. And then one of the APIs would be to give you a signature for that representation.
Right.
My own implementation looks like what it will do is return, it actually has a callback which will return in, it's an iterator rather, for normalized statements, which can then be turned into a N triples document by using a consistent transformation from those statements to N triples. For that matter, probably not N triples, it's N quads to be more generic.
Yeah, for statements.
But that's
well, no,
that's
yeah,
really
yeah,
about
yeah.
a what a normalization algorithm does.
Right.
And the point with this is that we don't need normalization in the JSON API.
Right.
Couldn't you specify how to calculate a signature out of that normalized N triples document in the Paceworm spec, for example, if you need it there?
Yeah, we could, but we want it to be a bit more generic than that because this is a digital signatures issue. It's not necessarily a Paceworm issue. So it needs to be in something like a digital signatures for JSON. Or digital signatures for RDF spec or something like that, or for RDF graphs. So basically all I'm saying is that the problem is more general than Paceworm. We could do that in the very worst case, but we'd rather not do that. We'd rather do this.
I think we put it in the normalization document, but we need to get more exposure and visibility into that document.
Right. Okay, so maybe the normalization document describes the algorithm and an API hook on
right.
on what people should implement. Okay. Normalization spec should describe how to normalize RDF graphs and should... normalize RDF graphs, and it should outline an API call to get back a signature hash of the okay, so there's another issue here. If you wanted to do something like graph diffing, you would need to get back more than just a hash. You would need to get back an array of triples, effectively, or an array of quads.
So it might have an iterator, a callback that returns iterated, normalized statements.
Right.
Or it can just return a N quads document in normalized form.
Right. Back a list of yeah, and then I guess we need to talk about the triple API mechanism, right? Because it would probably be a list of quads or triples, and that needs to be outlined in the web IDO as well.
You're talking about in the normalization document?
Yeah, or something like that. I mean, you know, when we start talking about returning back an array of
I think it's similar to from triples, which takes. I'm sorry, to triples.
Yeah.
Which has a callback.
No, that's not my concern. So yes, we should implement it like that. I guess what I'm concerned about is the object in that array. So you return back an array of quads. Is the quad an object, or is it a four tuple? Or and if it's a four tuple, then you know how do we specify data type and language? It's the whole how do you represent?
Yeah. So the triple callback is defined to return a triple.
Mm-hmm.
And a triple is currently defined as three nodes. We would probably extend this to be four nodes, with the last one being nullable.
Mm-hmm.
And then those nodes are defined for, there's a base node, there's a named node, there's a blank node, and there's a literal node. This is right out of the, I think, RDF. Transformation is necessary. So basically, I'm suggesting that we use this pattern with necessary extensions.
Yeah. Okay. And that, I guess, would go in the normalization spec.
We might need a third spec which defines this that can be referenced.
Yeah.
Which sounds like the RDF API.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much what it's boiling down to. And that's unfortunate, because then that ends up becoming a block for the normalization stuff.
In the meantime, I think we just keep it in parallel, and then maybe it's as a work item to extract that. It's sort of like Curie should have been in a separate document, and it's resulted in some confusion that it's not.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so the proposal then is that we remove the normalization algorithm and API from the JSON LD API specification. The normalization algorithm will be placed into a separate RDF graph normalization specification, which contains an API for retrieving a set of normalized triples/quads.
Statements.
Yeah, there you go, normalized statements. Okay, so remove the normalization algorithm and API from the JSON-LD API specification. The normalization algorithm will be placed into a separate RDF graph normalization specification, which contains an API for retrieving a set of normalized statements. And Greg, plus one, minus one.
I must have typed in the wrong document.
Oh.
Wrong window. Sorry. Here we go.
Okay. Okay. Is that, those are all the ones that we could resolve fairly easily?
I'll just look quickly. Yeah, I think that the rest requires some more discussion.
Okay. All right, great. Thanks again, guys, for the very long call today.
Thanks for scribing for 2 hours. I'm sorry I didn't offer to jump in.
No, that's quite all right. So we're going to do this again next week to try and move through even more of them, and I'll try to get Dave Longley to outline some of these issues that we're waiting on him to weigh in on.
I'm not sure if I can join you next week because I'm at the conference giving a talk about JSON-LD.
Yes.
Oh, right. Well, maybe we should make a call where we call into the conference and listen to you. Give your presentation.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, good luck. Good luck on that, Marcus.
Yeah, if you had a chance to send your slides out, I'd certainly love to see them.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah,
and,
we'll upload them afterwards.
Do you have everything that you need? Do you have everything that you need from us for your talk at the conference? Okay.
Yeah, and I was actually quite surprised how many people already started using it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. It's yeah.
yeah. We were surprised as well. We didn't know that there was that big of a list of people, especially considering that we're not even an official, you know, standards track anything right now.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks. Best of luck to you next week, and we'll still meet next week and try to get through these issues. All right, thanks.
Yeah, we'll try to join. Okay.
Okay.
Bye. Okay.
Bye.